Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. Before we get into the podcast today, I just want to bring everyone's attention to a number of videos which are very shortly. We're recording this on Thursday, the 10th of November, so it should be up this evening. A number of videos from the presentations at our Virtual Investment Trust conference that was held on Tuesday. There was three investment trusts there, quite different in their themes. There were some focused on the environment and sustainable assets, as well as some focus on the growth story in India. So do check those out. They're going to be in the video section on the UK Investor Magazine website very, very shortly. So do have a look at those. So for today's podcast, we're going to be looking at a number of key themes in markets as well as UK equities. And to do that, we have with us once more, Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast this morning.
Morning again, John. Good to be back.
So, Alan, I mean, how are you finding markets out there today? I mean, we're sort of looking at the FTSE 100. We're trading above 7,200 at this point in time. I mean, what's your sort of feeling on the general mood on markets currently?
Well, I think we touched on this last week, didn't we, John? I think looking at certainly UK markets, I think obviously we take our cue from the US, and of course, markets weren't overly happy with the outcome of the midterm elections yesterday, but of course the Dow Jones did sort of fall during the day, but we've seen quite a strong opening this morning, and maybe we'll see them bounce back today. Certainly it hasn't been a seismic disruption as some might have hoped for. Donald Trump does seem to be receding into the back mirror now in some ways, but certainly I think the UK market is fairly resilient. You know, if we come closer to home, of course, we've got the domestic issues. But I think Rishi and his team seem to have steadied the ship, as it were. And there's certainly a sense now that there's more visibility. The Bank of England, of course, looking forward, are looking at peak rates of 4.5%, not the 6% that some pundits were predicting earlier. Of course, that could change, but I think now we've got that visibility. Once we're in the lead up to the big budget announcement, of course, that's coming up in about 10 days. Once we have that, then of course we'll have more certainty, and of course we'll look at the OBR forecast too. And I think that's going to be key. Whether the markets have priced that in already, I don't know. But I think we seem to have seen a return back to fairly, I wouldn't say benign trading conditions, but certainly there's a lot more stability than the boom and bust scenario that was created previously by the very brief Truss administration.
Yes, I mean, certainly there's been a number of potential risk events that we've overcome. And of course, there's the midterms, as you mentioned there, Alan, that could have been a disaster for Biden. It wasn't. Obviously, you know, the way that American politics works, you know, it does render him a little bit less powerful in terms of his agenda going forward. And, you know, you mentioned their interest rates. We've had a series of interest rates here in the UK as well as across the globe. And it looks as though the market's taken those in their stride, and you know we're probably going to be seeing further interest rate hikes, as you said there, Alan. You know these predictions here in the UK of going 6% don't look likely anymore. And then we've got the risk of the UK government really taking off the table with the appointment of Rishi Sunak, who seems to have done his job and steadied the ship so far. Although there's been a few bumps in the road with some of his early appointments, but you know, obviously people now, Alan, are going to be looking at, you know, what's next in markets. Of course, we've just had in the last week rumours coming from China that they're going to be looking at some point potentially in the spring of ending their zero COVID policy. And that saw a big rally in Chinese equities, as well as some of the miners here in London. So, I mean, sort of looking at potential scenarios going forward, Alan, I mean, do you think this is a situation that now we've got these political risks off the table, or being considered a lot more by the markets and largely priced in. Do you think it's a situation where we could really shift back? And we've started to see it already in the last week with earnings. Number one, looking at economic growth and, what that means for markets. And secondly, company earnings. Do you think they really drive markets as we go into the winter?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the key focus now. As you rightly said, politics is politics, and the uncertainty created by the Russia-Ukraine war, that's always there. But I think that's a managed risk now. I think there's a degree of certainty around that. Of course, and unless it escalates in some other way that perhaps hasn't happened yet. But certainly, I think now we're in earnings season. We've seen some earnings disappointment, as we were saying last week. But we're also seeing some good numbers too. And I think there's a sense of relief, I think, in the markets now that we can go back to just focusing on numbers. And of course, we've got some reasonably good numbers to digest this week. And of course, AstraZeneca, that we're going to discuss in a minute, is one such company. But I do see, the one worry yesterday, of course, Marks and Spencer's did sort of indicate that it expected some serious disruption next year. So I think certain sectors are going to have a tough time. We're in the run-up to Christmas now. Of course, the Santa rally may start at some point, but then it's going to next year. And I think often how well these retailers do in the run-up to Christmas and then that key January trading period is going to be very telling. And I think that will, in many ways, signal or flag up the likely progress or lack of for the rest of the new year.
Indeed. No, I think one other point that I'd bring in there is, it's a very basic influence on markets, but looking at what's happening as a result of the Ukraine and Russia war, of course, that's ongoing at the moment. But we saw a signalling of a retreat actually from Russia, from Kherson yesterday. But I think there's going to be a shift to the weather actually, Alan, because, looking at, how markets are setting up and, the big influences that we're seeing from the energy markets. If we see a warmer than average winter, that could have a big impact on markets going forward, because that will obviously free up some spending in households and probably see a situation where, just as after the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, everybody became an expert on geopolitics. I think we'll start to see over the winter everybody becoming an expert on the weather and the impact that's going to have on households going forward. So there's going to be some key themes, I think, playing out over the next few months that, of course, we'll be discussing on the podcast. But to move on now, Alan, we're going to look at the first company that, as you mentioned there, AstraZeneca. They've had a steady increase in shares so far this year and they've ticked higher this morning. They've put out their third quarter results as well as some figures for the 9 months to that period. What do they look like?
Yeah, so Astra, of course, we discussed Glaxo last week. Glaxo, very much a steady eddy of a stock, really. And I think, very much the financial performance of the shares, really, for as long as I can remember, has been very similar. So to use an old phrase, you can almost set your watch by it. It was so reliable. AstraZeneca is a different animal altogether, and I think obviously the AstraZeneca COVID vaccine was key to the fortunes of the group over the past few years. And of course, we've seen the shares push through 40, 50, 60. I held Astra a few years ago, actually, and I wish now I'd sort of held on, because it's just powered high. I mean, it's had an incredible year. If we look at the stock, it was trading back in the early part of the year at just over £80 a share, and it's pushed on, hit year highs of 111 or £115 per share. In fact, is the year high, currently trading at just on £111 a share now. And of course, the stock continues to pay a dividend, but it almost, in terms of price action, it almost behaves like a smaller cap stock. I mean, there's lots of lots of liquidity, lots of volatility. So it's an all action stock in that regard. And then, of course, the numbers today explain why there's so much activity in the company. I mean, the first 9 months of 2022, revenue growth of 37% to 33.1 billion, which is incredible. That ignores the effect of currency movements, of course. So the company acquired medicines from Alexion Group in a deal that it completed at the start of Q3. But gross margins also improved during the period as well to 81%, up 6 percentage points. The group has reiterated once again its full year guidance, low 20s percentage growth. Earnings per share guidance has been increased to low 30s, which is really quite incredible. And we've seen shares up, of course, again this morning. So I think we can expect now, on the back of that news and on the back of that earnings visibility, all important earnings visibility, I think we're going to see the shares power back to year highs and possibly higher still. Every time you think AstraZeneca has hit as high as it can possibly go, on it goes again. It's on a pretty racy valuation too, you know, with a market capitalization of nearly 170 billion. But this is the pharmaceutical cornerstone of so many investment portfolios, and it, at the moment, it's the big pharma that just keeps on giving.
So, Alan, I've got a question here, and this probably speaks more to your personal preferences and your personal risk tolerances more than anything. But if you had to select either GSK or AstraZeneca to put into your portfolio, which one would you go for?
I'd buy AstraZeneca. I mean, just purely because, you know, I think with GSK, you could time it correctly. But I think when you're buying a big stock, to get the sort of movement and excitement that Astra generates, because it's doing enormous deals, you know, it's a very well-run company, a huge portfolio of drugs that are coming to market. Of course, that was what the big pharmas do. You know, we're invested into a lot of the smaller companies like HVivo and Poolberg Pharmaceuticals, Sizzle Biotech, all of the smaller companies. But of course, they bring the drugs through and then they're acquired, or when they go to phase three trials, that's when the big boys like Astra come in, take them to market, and of course, do the licensing and everything else. And that's the skill set they have. And I think AstraZeneca does that just as well, just about as well as any company in the world today.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. So moving on to another company that I believe, actually speaking before the podcast, you've recently added to your personal portfolio, Alan. It's a company that, you know, sort of looking at, you know, the last year or so, it's been trading in quite a solid range, but it's making signs that it's breaking out of that range now. It's Georgia Capital. So what are the main reasons, Alan, for you picking this up?
Well, this is an interesting company. I say a company, it's an investment trust. I interviewed former fund manager and investment analyst Ken Batch a few days ago, and that interview is up on the Brandcom's YouTube channel, so you can go and watch that. It's a long talk, but Ken gives a very good, solid overview of his investment strategy for this month, and also he picks out four stocks, you know, and Georgia Capital was one stock he picked out. Now Georgia Capital, it's focused on the Georgian economy, which contrary to what a lot of people might think, is a very strong economy. GDP growth of 10% per annum, inflation of 8%, and the local currency there is currently stronger than sterling. So it's a very solid economy. And what the company does, it just invests into Georgian assets. Its primary investment is the Georgia Bank. And of course, that's just issued a very strong set of quarter three numbers today. Net asset value up 31.3%, which of course is pretty impressive. It's in fact, no, my apologies. That's Those are the Georgia Capital numbers. Net asset value up 31.3% today. So that's overall on its across the network of investments that it has. So it's invested into Georgia Bank. It's also invested into the local health infrastructure there, invested into private hospitals, invested into private education, and also pharmacy chains. So it's very much exposed to the Georgian economy. And it's been trading at an incredible discount to net asset value. And I think the primary reason, conclusion that a lot of analysts have come to with this is that because it's so close to Russia, it's in a sense linked to Russia's fortunes, and of course it's the Russia-Ukraine war, and of course any implications it might have for Georgia. But Georgia, as a standalone, is doing very well indeed, and I think investors, both retail and institutional, are starting to cotton on that. Hang on, this is trading at a huge discount in net asset value. That net asset value is expected to currently to be around 18 to 19 pounds per share. So of course we're trading at just over a third of that currently. It has come up strongly in recent weeks, as you pointed out, John. But I think as you say, the shares look like they're going to break out. Now we're the year high of the stock stock is 742 pence. We're currently 706 pence, but it's been pushing that high. But it's hit three higher highs since June this year. So that's a very strong sign that the stock is looking to break out. But certainly based on the numbers today and the growth, if you look at the quarter three statement from Georgia Capital, I think you'll find that there's plenty more to come. And certainly there is. It is very much trading at a deep discount to its current net asset value.
I mean, is that a discount that you see being built in due to the tensions in the region, Alan? Or do you think that's something more to do with the company and they're now moving through those eternal issues, if there are any?
Well, I think it's largely to do with that. It's largely to do with the proximity to Russia in terms of its geography, and of course a lot of the assets that they're invested into are close to Russia too. And of course, if Russia is being aggressive like this, is it going to invade Georgia? There's all of that. But certainly the discipline the company's shown in delivering growth across all of these assets. I think the risk off nature of investors, particularly given the Truss and Kuateng debacle a few months ago, I think that's probably a lot of people taking money off the table and they've just sat back. And of course, companies like George Capital, because they're associated with quote unquote that area, they've been largely ignored. But actually, when you take a closer look, you realise that there's a very strong economy there. There's a very strong investment policy being executed by the leadership team there, and the company is trading well below net asset value. So, of course, it is in a sense a play on the geopolitical risks in that region. So you've got to take that into account. But I think certainly at this level, I think we are going to see some increases on the back of the numbers today, and we could well see some decent gains in the coming weeks.
Fantastic. So moving on, Alan, to the last stock that we're going to discuss today, one that we have touched on the podcast previously, but it's been quite a significant update from them just this week. It's Vela Technologies. So what's been happening there?
Yeah, so Vela Technologies, of course, John, we've spoken about Tech Capital, and there are various other companies out there that are listed that spin technology out of universities into the commercial sector. And there are many companies out there that invest in technology. And Vela is an AIM-quoted company focusing on early stage and pre-IPO disruptive technology investments, and it has a raft of investments. It reported in its quarterly update on November the 8th, net asset value per share of 0.039 pence, so 3.9p, 13 active investments, two were unquoted, 10 are quoted. The pivotal investment, I think, for the group is its interest in future royalties from the COVID-19 and also diabetes remedy being developed by St. George's Street Capital, where it has an economic interest in the commercialization of that. It quoted a fair value of the investment portfolio at 5.8 million, and that compares again to the current market capitalization, which is 3.8 million. So trading at a huge discount to the value. So there's no upside or there's no future premium for growth built into the valuation currently at all. The shares have traded as high as 3.2p on the year, as low as 0.15p, currently at 2.6p. And I think what we've seen following that is the group has just reported on each individual company investment that it's been engaged with, particularly the listed companies. There's been, I think, slow progress over the period. So that's contributed not to the malaise, but just the generally flat performance from the company. But then yesterday we had a further update from the company regarding this investment in AZD 1656 through St. George's Street Capital. Conduit Pharmaceuticals, of which AZD 1656 is one of its key assets, announced the day before yesterday that it intends to list on the NASDAQ through a merger with Murphy Cannon Acquisition Corporation, a NASDAQ listed special purpose acquisition company, a SPAC. So the company's coming to market. It means AZD 1656 is going to be commercialized. So of course, given that Vela has a large stake in that asset, potentially there's going to be some significant upside on offer for Vela once the company lists, and of course there's a valuation achieved with that. And of course, we've seen that process, John, haven't we, through Tech Capital with the listing of Lucid and Innovative Eyewear, and I know Tech Capital also have the upcoming IPO for Microsoft to look forward to as well. So these are key value inflection points, and I think what we saw with Vela yesterday was that value inflection point. So very exciting times. Of course, once this is listed, the value of the biotech assets on NASDAQ always far exceeds the valuation that one might achieve on the UK market for an equivalent company. So it's going to be exciting to see what that company comes to market at. And of course, the value of the economic interest that Vela will have, which could materially change the outlook for the company as we go forward.
So, Alan, looking at the rest of the portfolio, are there any other standout companies in there for you at Vela?
Yeah, there are a number of standout companies. So the company has investments into Ensilica. Ensilica is a chip manufacturer or a chip based company. It has investments in Cornerstone, which is an FX and fintech company, Northcoders Group, IT Group, which has progressed has made solid progress this year, and also Community Social Investment, which was formerly WeShop. The company has an interest in that. There's progress for that. Rural Broadband Solutions is another company. It's rolling out sort of fiber broadband in some of these more remote places throughout the UK. That's growing steadily. So there are a number of companies within the portfolio that can deliver growth. It's also seen the downward pressure on the portfolio has also come from some companies that have undergone revaluation. Mode Global Holdings is one such. Mode, of course, being the the cryptocurrency exchange provider, the company that has an app which allows people to buy and sell Bitcoin, but also to use their Bitcoin assets to make purchases from a group organizations with which it has a commercial relationship. Skillcast is another one. True Spine Technologies. So that these are all great companies in their own right that will be delivering growth. But of course, as with a lot of early stage investments, it takes time for that investment to come to fruition, and it also takes time for that value to be realized in the marketplace too. So that probably reflects to some degree the discount to the value of the investments that the company currently trades at. But when you get an event like the asset AZD1656, the primary owner of that asset being listed on NASDAQ, you know, that's a big game changer for the company. So I think at this level, it's offering great value.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. So just a quick recap of the stocks that we discussed today. It was AstraZeneca up first with the ticker of AZN. It was then Georgia Capital, which has a ticker of CGEO. And just then was, of course, Vela Technologies with the ticker of VELA. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
So just as a final note to listeners, do check out the video section for the UK Investor Magazine website, where you'll be able to find the recordings of presentations this week at the Virtual Investment Trust Conference. Thank you very much for listening.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.